This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. This week, I received a number of emails from people who had a friend or family member with their LDS faith shaken, or in a few cases, they actually left the church over anti-Mormon literature that they had seen on the internet and in some cases in book or pamphlet form. So today I wanted to talk about how you deal with situations like that, because with the internet, problems like this come up more and more often. First of all, the bright side. As one of our great LDS scholars, who has since passed away, Professor Hugh Nibley, who was educated at UC Berkeley and a professor at BYU for many, many years, once said, quote, "We need more anti-Mormon books. They keep us on our toes," close quote. Such a great comment, and so very, very true. There has actually been a number of studies, or there have actually been a number of studies that have shown that when there is anti-Mormon literature that is published and when anti-Mormon statements are made in the press in a public arena, interest in the church grows and conversion rates actually go up. So there's direct correlation between anti-Mormon literature and the number of people who join the church. The more anti-stuff, the more new members the church has. Now, there's a great article if you go on the website of fairlds.org. If you're not familiar with FAIR, it's the Foundation for Apologetic Information and Research. Apologetic doesn't mean making an apology, it means to defend the faith. They're basically an organization that defends the LDS faith against critics of the church. Every year they have a conference. It's a great place for interesting information and information that is very useful. About 12 years ago, almost 12 years ago, there was this great presentation at FAIR by one of its members by the name of Mike Ash. And he had this wonderful paper on how critics actually benefit the church, very much along the same lines as what Professor Nibley said. And if you'd like to take a look at it, how critics actually benefit the church, go on to fairlds.org and look it up. It's great. He had scriptural citations to back up his comment, and I completely agree with him. And in view of his particular address, I saw those verses in a new light. In 2 Nephi, in chapter 2, verse 11, we read this: "For it must needs be that there is an opposition in all things." Anti-Mormon stuff, that's an opposition. "If not so, righteousness could not be brought to pass." And it goes on and says, "Neither wickedness, neither holiness, nor misery, nor good, nor bad." Righteousness could not be brought to pass without opposition. Would it be possible that as much righteousness would not be here without anti-Mormon literature and critics of the church? I really genuinely believe that to be true. As Hugh Nibley says, it keeps us on our toes. And I'll give you one personal example. My first encounter with anti-Mormon literature was when I was in high school. There was an anti-Mormon critic who did something that would never be allowed today. He was standing on the sidewalk between the high school that I attended and the seminary building, the LDS seminary building. And as everyone walked out to seminary, he handed me this anti-Mormon literature. Most of the kids tossed them in the trash can. I kept mine and took a look at it and worked really hard to find the answers to everything that was in it. It turned out that at the time that was a great benefit for me because I learned that there are answers to criticisms. The other fascinating anecdote and rest of the story is that the anti-Mormon guy who handed out the tract was a guy named Wally Tope, who sadly was killed in the LA riots. But before that happened, I actually had him as a guest on my radio show a few times, and we sort of had friendly debates back and forth about several issues. And letting people know that the church and its members are not afraid of critics and that there are answers to these questions, I think, is a very healthy thing. One of the reasons that sometimes people don't get the answers that they need is that people don't know where to look. And one of the first things right out of the chute that I want to do is give you two places to look if you have questions. Actually, three. One of them is FAIR. Take a look at their website, fairlds.org. The other one is the Interpreter Foundation. Their website is mormoninterpreter.com. That particular name, incidentally, came from sort of a similar usage of the Interpreter Bible Dictionary, which is a fabulous source if you want to take a look at the Bible. An ecumenical group of people, very amazing scholars, wrote articles about the Bible and produce this wonderful multi-volume Bible translation with commentary. And the Interpreter Foundation has similar goals, to provide Latter-day Saints with commentary on various issues to help them. If you happen to be teaching a Sunday school class this year, go on to mormoninterpreter.com. All the lessons are discussed ahead of time, many weeks ahead of time, by certain members of the Interpreter Foundation. It doesn't matter what the specific issue is. People sometimes read a blanket statement by anti-Mormon critics about the church, and there are answers to every one of these. Years ago, I was involved in what was affectionately known as the Criticisms Project. It was being handled at that time by Farms, and there were several thousand criticisms of the church that were found, categorized, and responded to by Farms. The effort was made to actually find every single criticism of the church that has ever been made. I would include the Book of Mormon, other scriptures, the history of the church, the current church, anything you can think of, it was responded to. And I can tell you, I never saw a single criticism that I did not think was appropriately responded to and did not have an adequate answer. When we come back from our break, I'm going to talk about some of the basic categories that people tend to look at when they're criticizing the church, and then talk about places that you can go to get some very good responses to each one of them, and also a little bit more about exactly how you respond to someone who may come up with a question or a concern, or say that they have a concern about their faith based on critical information that they've seen. Stay tuned. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you're just joining us, we're talking about critics of the church, how they can be beneficial. Stay tuned.
With Martin Tanner on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Today we're talking about how critics of the church actually benefit the LDS faith and its members. And we've been talking about some different ways that people within the church should help those who have a crisis of faith because they've seen anti-LDS literature somewhere. Now, if you have a question or comment about this topic or this program, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. If you have a family member or a friend or someone else, or if you yourself have a question of faith, some kind of a concern about the LDS faith based on something that you've read or seen, feel free to send me an email. You may also want to take a look at two websites that are fabulous. One of them is fairlds.org. The other is mormoninterpreter.com. They are both wonderful websites, and no matter what your question may be, there will be an answer. I thought I would talk a bit about some of the basic criticisms that tend to come up over and over and over and over again about the church, give a brief answer, and then, of course, if you want more details, send me an email or send one to fairlds.org or mormoninterpreter.com, and you will get more detailed information. One of the first criticisms that I ever heard was, the Joseph Smith translation really isn't an ancient translation, a translation of an ancient document, because it's just impossible that a lot of the ways that Joseph Smith changed the Bible in the Joseph Smith translation could be found in the original text. And you know what? That's true. But perhaps the Joseph Smith translation is more like a Joseph Smith commentary or divinely inspired revision of the Bible rather than a translation of the ancient document. So if we acknowledge what it really truly is and also acknowledge that Joseph Smith never finished that project, it was a work in progress, and I think we come closer to understanding the Joseph Smith translation for what it is. Another criticism that often comes up is that Mormons aren't Christians. Why? Because we have a different concept of God. We don't believe in the Trinitarian concept of God. Number two, we believe in continuing revelation. And number three, we have new scriptures. The irony of that position is that those critics who take that position apparently fail to acknowledge that the Bible itself does not have the Trinitarian concept of God within its pages. As Protestant, Catholic, and many other scholars will acknowledge, nowhere in the Bible does it say, and I would love for somebody to send me a verse if they think there is a verse that says this, because there isn't. You won't find it. There is no verse in the Bible that says that God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Ghost are three persons of one undivided substance. Now, that is the Trinitarian concept of God. It is not biblical. The idea that there are going to be no more scriptures is also not biblical, because there are other scriptures not in the Bible that are actually mentioned there. One of the ones that I had occasion to discuss this week was Paul's letter to the Laodiceans, which was actually mentioned in another one of his letters in Corinthians, and yet that letter to the Laodiceans has been lost. And the third one, no Latter-day prophets. The Bible in the book of Revelation says there will be prophets in the latter days. it even specifically mentions two. So how there can be no more prophets, no more apostles after the time of Jesus and the original 12 apostles is just beyond me. But that's what some critics say. Another criticism is that Latter-day Saints are wrong because they believe in deification, theosis, the concept that as man is now God once was, as God is now man may become. Now, what an amazing concept to believe that we are capable of becoming like God. The biblical texts that support this concept are to be found from the words of Jesus. Jesus says that he did nothing but what his Father did before him. That implies very strongly that God also went through the process that Jesus did and that we all do of an earthly existence. And there are other places that tell us that we should become perfect, that we should become like our Father in heaven, that we should emulate Jesus. This is a concept that recurs over and over and over in the scriptures. Therefore, this concept that we may become like God is not something that's aberrant or unbiblical. It's something that is definitely part of the biblical tradition. Baptism for the dead is a criticism. Again, this is scriptural. People may not understand it, but it is something that happened during early Christianity. There are people who criticize the whole idea of the book of Abraham. We've dealt with that in other programs. Suffice it to say that those who claim that all of the papyrus from which the book of Abraham was translated have been found, and that Joseph Smith's translation does not coincide, are in error. They are wrong. We have found less than 3% of the original papyrus, and the part that the book of Abraham was written on was lost in the Chicago fire. So that criticism is in error. It's a red herring. Then you get these other criticisms that are of the Book of Mormon, anachronisms, no archaeological evidence for it. There are many, many archaeological evidences for the Book of Mormon. I have done a number of presentations and firesides where I discuss some of the 28 most prominent ones. People who say that Book of Mormon geography has never been found. Take a look at John L. Sorensen's book, An Ancient Setting for the Book of Mormon. There are those who claim the Book of Mormon was compiled from other sources like the Spalding manuscript or the View of the Hebrews. I have read both of those manuscripts, the one written by Solomon Spalding and the View of the Hebrews by Ethan Smith, and they are not even remotely close to the text of the Book of Mormon. It's impossible that those were really the foundation of it. If you read it and honestly evaluated it, you would come to the same conclusion. Then there are other issues like King James quotes within the Book of Mormon, DNA, church doctrines, different kinds of things. We don't have time to go into all of those, but if you have someone that has a question, don't shrug it off. Don't tell them to just have faith. Point them in the right directions. Point them to information that will help them satisfy their questions, because there are appropriate and complete answers to them. Have them go to fairlds.org or to mormoninterpreter.com, or have them send me an email. There is information about all of these things. And if you have a question, know there is a response. There is a response. I hope this has been a useful program to you. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today on KSL.